Can Dennis Hogan get a decision against Jaime Munguia in Mexico?
Well, Hogan's trainer, Glenn Russell, says, you know what, we're going to leave that up to them. We got American judges. Hopefully they're going to be neutral and see that the Fed Man won.
What a play. That is it. Has he done it? You can see the green shirts celebrating.
This is where the judges come. This is when the judges come, and they got to do the right thing. They got to give the round by round who won the fight, who won the round.
Oscar De La Hoya all smiles with a hand pound to Munguia, but you've got to believe behind that smile is a lot of concern from the Golden Boy.
Hogan's corner just came up to us and yelled, we've got that fight. We deserve this decision. We'll see if the judges agree.
Ladies and gentlemen, after 12 rounds of boxing, we now go to the judges' scorecard. For your winner by the way of majority decision, and still WBO Super Welterweight Champion of the World, Fuerza Tijuas, Jaime Munguia!
Relief for Munguia, disbelief for Dennis Hogan. Sergio, did we witness a robbery tonight here in Mexico?
Robbery is a strong word, but we thought Hogan pulled off this fight. He boxed brilliantly. He fought when he had to fight. I thought he deserved this decision against the Mexican champion here in Mexico.
Yeah, Sergio Mora on commentary, pretty strong with his views. Dennis Hogan is on the line. Good evening, Dennis.
Hey, mate, how you going?
How do you feel listening back to that?
Yeah, I stirred up a few emotions, actually. I wasn't expecting to hear that, but again, disbelief, to be honest with you. I kept saying it in my head when they were about to call the verdict. And actually, when I heard that the first judge's decision was 114-114 a draw, even at that, I was disappointed. That scared me a little, because I knew I had done enough to win the fight, and then I just kept hearing, I knew, and I was just waiting for them to say it. And when they said, and still, it's like my heart just fell into my stomach and went, what has just happened here? So it's not a very nice thing to be hearing.
No, I'd imagine not. Does the anger subside as time goes on? It's still, what, less than a fortnight ago. Are you still as angry, still as frustrated today as you were that night?
I never really got angry. It's frustrating. It's disappointing. Didn't get angry because I trained harder in that camp than I'd ever trained. I've been putting in over and over and over again the past few years. And we went there with a brilliant game plan. I executed that game plan, and I beat the champion. I know I've won more rounds than the champion did, and that's all I could possibly do. So all I'm doing is keeping that with me, and so I'm not getting emotional about it all. Yes, it's obviously disappointment. Frustrated, but I'm not letting this get to me. It's not. I do believe that. Obviously, you know, there's no point in me getting too depressed and sad about it, because I've got to get back up now again. You know, we do believe the WBO are going to do the right thing. We're going to either issue a rematch, or else reinstate me in the next fight for the world championship, maybe against another challenger for a vacant title. But I got to stay in the energy. I can't drop my guard now in this very crucial time of my career.
It's great that you are remaining so positive after the disappointment, the initial disappointment. When you say there you're standing, waiting for the decision and waiting, almost trying to translate for the "and you," were you totally confident that you had won that fight and you were going to get that decision? Or in the back of your mind, once that final bell rang, is part of you thinking, I'm here in Mexico, this guy Jaime Munguia is this highly rated hometown boy where everybody's looking forward to his career, he could be a superstar, there's talk of fights down the track with Canelo Alvarez, that his path is already sort of set out in stone for him, that this type of scenario may unfold?
I never cared about Jaime Munguia. People ask me, do I feel disrespected by the talk of Canelo, GGG, other people? And I said no, because you've got to think about the bigger picture. I was thinking about a homecoming fight with Spike O'Sullivan. I didn't care about Jaime Munguia. I didn't buy into the hype. I don't buy into the hype of anybody. Steve Collins said it many years ago, you can beat anybody with a game plan. Right? He's a big puncher. I fought big punchers. I've outboxed them. I outpointed them, outclassed them, outsmarted them. And I went there with that game plan and supreme belief that I would do it again. The second the bell went, I knew I felt I had run an A4. I thought that might have been biased. I knew I didn't lose any more rounds than five rounds, which meant I won seven. And you seen me after that bell went, I went and ran, jumped to the top corner, and I screamed with every part about me. All that emotion had left my body because I had just gone and achieved everything I had set out to do. Now all we were doing was going to wait and hear and get the belt around my waist. That was all that was going through my head at that point.
And Dennis, you mentioned you had no fear of Munguia. That was, like, obviously in the ring as well, you had experience at higher weight, so the size disparity wasn't an issue for you. In terms of the game plan, you mentioned it a couple of times. What were the specific things that you wanted to get off in that fight? And did the fight play out exactly as you'd planned for?
Exactly. I mean, if people could read between the lines of what I was saying, was he wants to stand there and he wants to bang away at fellas that are either moving in one dimensionally or else when they take shots, they stay still or even back themselves up against the rope. So stay away from the ropes, get my distance right, be able to beat him from the outside first off, because that's where I do my best work. Make sure if we got in close, we won every exchange, you know. And then more often than not, stay away from the mid-range, because that's where he comes into mid-range and he gets his power shots off. But very, very early, I felt I nullified that, you know, where that big shot, that big left hook to the body where he wears people down, I was blocking those shots. And then I was starting to block them and land my own big left hooks, where obviously hurt him, where he wasn't doing that anymore. I believe he was out of answers. He was looking for solutions, more solutions, come after the 6-7 round. The 8 round, I just thought he was desperate. That's, I think, the round when he started just throwing shots from anywhere, even though he had no previous luck with shots like that from the outside before. And I was just in cruise control. I was just doing everything. I was keeping my variation. I kept outsmarting him. I kept throwing different shots. And I even got comfortable. I know, I stood in there with him sometimes, like just in and out, bang, 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 where a couple of shots were missing, a couple of shots were landing on either part, but I definitely knew I was getting the better of those two. And I had no problem. I had no fear of the power at all. And because I knew that my movement, if shots were to kind of come my way, I would either just be able to get out of the way of them or I can roll with it. So everything just came to an absolute T, and I couldn't understand how the judges could have given it. I mean, he's the homeboy, he's Mexican, he was the champion. I understood that, and even still, I felt I had done more than enough to win at least 7 rounds. I felt 8, so, what can I say on that?
It sounds like you get an awful lot of satisfaction from how on this, the biggest night of your career, you delivered. You put in the perfect camp in advance and then pressure away from home, that actually you weren't overawed in any way, that actually you could put that game plan and execute it to perfection. You can take a lot out of the night.
I can take a lot out of that. And I've told people before, you know, I can step up when it's time to step up. I can fight fighters. I don't know, like fighters that may not be as good as that or may not be at that level, I can fight them and beat those guys, right? But I've known that I can get to the world-class level and outbox those guys too. And I've been saying this for a long time. I've been proving it in sparring around the world. And that night was the night that I went out and proved it on the world stage with the whole world watching. And I know I can improve on that again. And like all those, for any champion in my division right now, I have complete confidence that I can beat them and outsmart them. And you know what? A big fight like that as well, we've learned a lot from that also. We don't look at it as a loss, but I've still learned a lot more from that too. There's still more we can do. Me and Glenn were very happy about that moving after that fight. A good chat we had the next day when we reflected back. And everything that we were talking about made sense. And so we get that rematch, we win it even better again. No doubt about it. If we don't get it, we fight a vacant title, we win that. I would want to go straight to unify the division against those guys. It was like we said before, before I had the belief I could beat anybody. Now I know I can. And yeah. That just adds a whole new element to me and my boxing.
You touched on it in your post-fight interview at the time that they've tried to take my family's future away. That there is another side to this, which is you're 34, you know, you've dependents, you've people who rely on you. You're at that stage of your career where you want to make as much money as possible. You want to set yourself up for the rest of your life. And like a setback like this, as much as you can take from it in terms of your career and the positivity and knowing you're at that level, from a purely financial point of view, you want to make sure that this doesn't cost you in the long run.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you look at what went on there, right, you know, no disrespect in whatever way I work for fighters, I probably shouldn't use the word cash cow, but he's bringing in a lot of income for himself, his team, and the promoters there. So so they're looking at that. And then, but then there's also you know, then there's me as well. That, you know, like he's locked into contracts now. Where I think he's getting $1.5 million a fight. A loss there and a fair decision, and giving me the win was never going to disrupt his life in any way. Whereas for me, I don't know, you know, who knows what's next. I know that a lot of good stuff has come from this, and a lot of good world and promoters maybe want to back me and this, that, and the other. But as I say, if I'd have been given the title, the strap on the night, which I deserved, and then everything else would have opened up. You know, it's been said that the next couple of fights may have edged to $5 million for me, and that certainly sets my family up. So first and foremost for me, the goal, the passion is to be world champion. It's what I set out to do, and that's first and foremost. But on the night, I couldn't help feel that with that world title came the money, and then came my family having everything that they need, and just being able to provide for them. And that would have been a much more satisfying feeling. And then obviously that just felt like it was ripped for me over everything that happened. I'll be honest, when I stood there and that decision was given out, Chavez Senior, Barrera, and two other guys sat there. They weren't looking at each other. They weren't looking up at the ring where I was. They sat there and they just looked at the ring apron as they were sitting, and they didn't know what to say either. They had nothing to say. They didn't know where to look, and just the feeling of just what happened was just echoed through me, and I couldn't believe it. So, I mean, I get the feeling that, you know, and I also know that this might sound like I'm whinging, I'm doing whatever. I'm not. I'm positive. I know I'll kick on from this. I know I'll move on from this. But if anybody's asking me about what I felt and what went on in the night, I've got to be honest and open about that.
Yeah, and we mentioned that the WBO are going to launch an independent investigation into the scoring, and we're hoping to get some clarity on that by the end of this week, I think. But Dennis, I know you've mentioned yourself you're unsatisfied rather with the drug testing protocol around the fight, and it's something Andy Lee touched on when he fought in Mexico against Chavez. Can you just tell me a bit about the fight week experience in Mexico? Was it well below expectations?
No, I mean the Mexican people were beautiful to us, like really, really nice. The place was beautiful. Everything was really good, and we even went to a gym that we hadn't got lined up. And they became really good friends of ours. At gym, I think the B-side female fighter that fought against the Golden Boy and female world champion, we went to their gym, and they were just so nice, and the people were so nice. And even still, I've gotten hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of messages from Mexicans saying that they won the fight, and you know, this, that, and the other, and that they would like to see me back boxing there again, and there's all of that. But on the week of the fight, you know, just to be honest about, well, I couldn't believe that I hadn't been drug tested, and I said it a few times. I even said it in LA, like, because my last title fight in Germany, I've had to do urine tests and stuff after training, and that even came to Dublin where I was finishing my camp before I went out, and there was none of that. And then before the fight, there was no even saliva swab that they do in America before I fought main event on CBS. And then, then after the fight, there was nothing. We waited around, but there was nothing. But my coach Glenn had brought it up at the fighter meeting, saying, you know, what's the story of the drug test? This is all within the contract. And the supervisor went, oh yeah, well, go and have that conversation now. And he disappeared. And there was no more about it. Not until after the fight, and we were in the dressing room after the press conference and everything, no one was there to test us, so we just had to leave it at that point. So then we knew there was, if I hadn't been tested, either had he. That was really disappointing. On the night, if you look back over the TV video of the fight, you will see Mongoya, especially from the mid rounds onwards. You know, it's obviously, you know, Chris Mannix from the zone. He could translate. He kept saying, "Am I winning?" You know, and he was saying, "What should I do?" Even once he said, "I can't hit him." So he was saying all of that throughout, you know, and that was translated. And you can quote me as quoting Chris Mannix as saying that. But Mongoya kept looking. He wasn't looking at his coach. He wasn't looking at his corner in the corner. He was looking down to the right of the ring, right from where he sat. And now a video has gone up to YouTube that shows the promoters were overlooking what the actual official scorecard was. And the supervisor was sitting two people away, and he wasn't looking, he wasn't acknowledging what was going on there. So what was happening was they were sitting there feeding him the scores, telling him, okay, you need to be more dominant. You know, in the last round, they would have said, you needed this round. Now, he came out more dominant in the 12th round, right? But I know I landed more shots than him in that round. Even CompuBox, I think, had me winning 12 shots more. Whether you believe I won that round or not, I don't really... It's all in the past now. But he was told to come out and look dominant in that last round that he needed. Now, if you don't know about that, like, I mean, that's completely against what should have went on there. All of that evidence is there for you guys to see. Watch the fight back. Watch who he's watching from the 56th round onwards in between. And then look at that video on YouTube. Just type it in and then you'll see everything that's gone on there. And I mean, I don't even know what's going to be done about that. You know, what Paul Keegan, the promoter of DDP Sports, keeps saying is, everyone says, that's boxing, you know, you knew what you were getting. But where do you draw the line and say enough is enough? Like, I do have a young family to feed and to look after, and I have every intention of doing that. Like I said, I will come back and I'll push harder and I'll get that title. But for now, I mean, is that okay? Do we let that slide? Is that okay to happen?
Well, answer that yourself. Like, do you let that slide? If the offer of a rematch comes up, do you get into a ring with Mayunga again?
I do, and I beat him easier. But we got to make sure now, and we got to keep pressure on the WBO to do the right thing. Because we've seen it many, many times before where these things go on, but it all lets slide. And it just goes away, and that's what people want. But I mean, there's enough stuff now, and we got to keep the pressure on the WBO for them to have integrity and dignity in the sport. Not saying they don't perform, but just to carry those values and to make sure that either a rematch is ordered or that if Mongoya does want to move up to another weight, that I fight for the vacant title. And I'm open to either one of those because I'm ready to right that wrong. And I don't believe, you know, like. I mean, there's even stuff been said. Like, I mean, there's even people saying, right, you know, lots of people are calling robbery, right? It is what it is, what they're saying. There's also other people out there that might have said, you know, it's probably not a robbery, but it is, but Hogan did win that fight. But is that not the same thing? So I don't know how to make the distinction that I've won the fight, I beat the champion clear in Mexico as a champion, but then they don't distinguish the difference between that or a robbery. Mm. I mean, I know nobody gave me a chance going into this fight. I've seen so many interviews, I've heard people even having a giggle about not giving me a chance, but I knew, and anybody around me knew what I was capable of, because they've been around me the whole time. And I went out and proved that, and here we are now having this conversation where we should be talking about my first defence in the Three Arena in Dublin that I've been dreaming about for the last 8 years as going pro.
And as Teddy Atlas would say, it was a robbery without leaving fingerprints, Dennis, even though it was close, you were the clear winner. But you mentioned Chris Mannix earlier, and I know you're having a bit of crack with him before the fight, that he was saying, who is Dennis Hogan? And then you said, you're going to know who I am after this fight. And do you feel like even in defeat, once the dust has settled, your brand is at an all-time high now, everyone knows your name, rightly or wrongly, because of your brilliant performance in Mexico, and going forward, you're in a stronger position than you ever were?
Yeah, I mean, there is. I mean, so that is all the silver lining. So, I will benefit from all of that, there's no doubt. But in terms of... I can leave this part of the conversation at this. What are we, like, if I felt I won the fight, obviously with all the silver lining, I feel I won the fight, everybody else, all the Mexican Mongolia fans that have money and Mongolia have messaged me and said you won the fight, right? So I mean, when does boxing stop becoming something that people can't dream for? Like, what's this showing the generation coming up? What about the 14, 15-year-olds that are thinking about going into boxing or thinking about dreaming about being a professional? And then they're seeing what's happened to me. They've watched that fight. They're, you know, they're getting all the good feelings about an Irish boy, an underdog story, going out there winning it, and then they see what happens. Does this deter all those young children or boys or even girls? Like, does that deter them now from doing it? I believe we have to push now to make sure justice happens in our sport going forward, because this is a sport that saves lives. This is a sport that keeps people on the straight and narrow, gives people purpose, dignity. And I believe, not just for myself, but for the future generations coming, we need to make sure that these decisions are happening. And if something goes down like it did last week, that we're able to rectify these things and give people hope. And not just that's boxing, that's what it is. Because if that's what it is from the start, people may not even come into the sport.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? People might just leave it. Let's go somewhere where you can score a goal and get the goal. Let's go to soccer. Let's go somewhere where we can use video refs like rugby or something. Not just going on a feeling on the night. So, I mean, that's what I want to push for. And that's the reason why I'm not going to let this go until we get justice in either a rematch or we get the vacant title going forward. But yes, to answer your original question, I do fully believe that there is lots of silver lining. It's like Michael Conlon when he got ripped off at the Olympics. He became, thinking about it, he couldn't have built a bigger brand for himself than the reaction that he gave the world after that. And it was a true reaction. He acted on how he felt. And now, you know, he's got a great career ahead of him. He's got top rank back in him. And he's in a great position. So I do feel there's a bit of a feeling of that happening to me now, and people will know my name, and the next time I go into a fight, I won't be such an underdog, and the judges will watch me from the start like they should have in their last fight.
Yeah, I think everyone knows your name for sure right now, Dennis. And you're back home in Kildare at the moment. I know you're based over in Australia and have been for pretty much all your professional career. Is the dream to come back to Ireland, to live in Ireland, to fight in Ireland, or are you very much based in Australia? Do you see your future over there?
Yeah, I mean, I have an Australian daughter, and for now, me, Bradeen and Ari are happy to live there, and you know, I've really settled in there, and I've made really good relationships. And you know, the gym that I'm in, I will definitely see out my career with Glenn Rushton in that gym, and with my strength coach, and the team that I have around me, they're just amazing people, and we really get on very well, and I love living there. So for the foreseeable future there, but I love coming back to Ireland. Ireland is where the heart is. I grew up here, and I'm really enjoying my time being here. It is blemished slightly over the bad decision, but there is also a good feeling of the fact that I've just broke through some mental barriers and went to Mexico and beat the world champion. So it's a bit bittersweet, but man, I love Australia. If I could, you know, someone asked me this a couple of days ago, one of my family, and I said I would love to have a house here and a house there. And alternate. Follow the seasons. Follow the sun. That'd be the ideal scenario.
Yeah, that's for sure. Dennis, I hope it all works out for you, both long-term and over the next few days with what happens with the WBO. We'll very much keep a close eye on it, and hopefully we might get you into studio as well while you're home here in Ireland. Thanks a lot for taking the call.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.